I waited briefly before I was allowed entrance into his examination room.
"Mr. Perry, good to see you again," he said, extending his hand.
The colonials who accompanied me left through the far door.
"Please step up to the crush."
"Well, the last time I did, you jackhammered several thousand bits of metal into my head," I said. "Forgive me if I'm not entirely enthusiastic about climbing in again."
"I understand," Dr. Russell said. "However, today is going to be pain-free, and we are under something of a time constraint, so if you please..."
He motioned to the creche. I reluctantly stepped in.
"If I feel so much as a twinge, I'm going to hit you," I warned.
"Fair enough,"
Dr. Russell said, as he closed the creche door. I noted that unlike the last time, Dr. Russell bolted the door down to the creche. Maybe he was taking the threat seriously. I didn't mind.
"Tell me, Mr. Perry," he said as he bolted the door, "what do you think of the last couple of days?"
"They were confusing and irritating," I said. "If I knew I was going to be treated like a preschooler, I probably wouldn't have signed up."
"And that's pretty much what everyone says," Dr. Russell said. "So let me explain a little bit about what we've been trying to do. We put in the sensor array for two reasons. First, as you may have guessed, we're monitoring your brain activity while you perform various basic functions and experience certain primal emotions. Every human's brain processes information and experience in more or less the same way, but at the same time, each person uses certain pathways and process unique to them. It's a little like how every human hand has five fingers, but each human being has his own set of fingerprints. What we've been trying to do is isolate your mental fingerprint. Make sense?"
I nodded.
"Good. So now you know why we had you doing ridiculous and stupid things for 2 days."
"Like talking to a naked woman about my 7th birthday party," I said.
"We get a lot of really useful information from that one," Dr. Russell said.
"I don't see how," I said.
"It's technical," Dr. Russell assured me. "In any event, the last couple of days give us a good idea of how your brain uses neural pathways and processes all sorts of stimuli, and that's information we can use as a template." Before I could ask, "A template for what?" Dr. Russell continued. "Second, the sensor array does more than record what your brain is doing. It can also transmit a real-time representation of the activity in your brain. Or, to put it another way, it can broadcast your consciousness. This is important because unlike specific mental processes, consciousness can't be recorded. It has to be live if it's going to make the transfer."
"The transfer," I said.
"That's right," Dr. Russell said.
"Do you mind if I ask you what the hell you're talking about?" I said.
Dr. Russell smiled.
"Mr. Perry, when you signed up to join the army, you thought we'd make you young again, right?"
"Yes," I said. "Everybody does. You can't fight a war with old people, yet you recruit them. You have to have some way to make them young again."
"How do you think we do it?" Dr. Russell asked.
"I don't know," I said. "Gene therapy, cloned replacement parts. You'd swap out old parts somehow and put in new ones."
"You're half right," Dr. Russell said. "We do use gene therapy and cloned replacements, but we don't swap out anything except you."
"I don't understand," I said.
I felt very cold, like reality was being tugged out from under my feet.
"Your body is old, Mr. Perry. It's old and it won't work for much longer. There's no point in trying to save it or upgrade it. It's not something that gains value when it ages or has replaceable parts that keep it running like new. All a human body does when it gets older is get old. So we're going to get rid of it. We're getting rid of it all. The only part of you that we're going to save is the only part of you that hasn't decayed. Your mind, your consciousness, your sense of self."
Dr. Russell walked over to the far door where the colonials had exited and rapped on it. Then he turned back to me.
"Take a good look at your body, Mr. Perry," he said, "because you're about to say goodbye to it. You're going somewhere else."
"Where am I going, Dr. Russell?" I asked. I could barely make enough spit to talk.
"You're going here," he said, and opened the door. From the other side, the Colonials came back in. One of them was pushing a wheelchair with someone in it. I craned my head to take a look, and I began to shake. It was me. 50 years ago.
Chapter 5.
"Now, I want you to relax," Dr. Russell said to me. The Colonials had wheeled the younger me to the other creche and were in the process of placing the body into it. It, or he, or I, or whatever, offered no resistance. They might as well have been moving someone in a coma. Or a corpse. I was fascinated and horrified. A small little voice in my brain told me it was good I'd gone to the bathroom before I came in, or otherwise I'd be peeing down my leg.
"How—"
I began, and I choked. My mouth was too dry to talk. Dr. Russell spoke to one of the Colonials, who left and returned with a small cup of water. Dr. Russell held the cup as he gave the water to me, which was good, because I don't think I could have managed to grip it. He spoke to me as I drank.
"How is usually attached to one of two questions," he said. "The first is, how did you make a younger version of me? The answer to that is that 10 years ago we took a genetic sample and used that to make your new body."
He took the cup away.
"A clone," I said. Finally.
"No," Dr. Russell said. "Not exactly. The DNA has been heavily modified. You can see the most obvious difference, your new body's skin." I looked back over and realized that in shock of seeing a younger version of me, I missed a rather obvious and glaring difference.
"He's green," I said.
"You're green, you mean," Dr. Russell said. "Or will be in about 5 minutes. So that's one how question. The second one is, how do you get me into there?" He pointed to my green-skinned doppelganger. "And the answer to that is, we're transferring your consciousness."
"How?"
I asked. "We take the representation of brain activity that's tracked by your sensor array and send it, and you, over there," Dr. Russell said. "We've taken the brain pattern information we've collected over the last couple of days and used it to prepare your new brain for your consciousness, so when we send you over, things will look familiar. I'm giving you the simplified version of things, obviously. It's vastly more complicated, but it'll do for right now. Now, let's get you plugged in." Dr. Russell reached up and began to maneuver the creche's arm over my head. I started to move my head away, so he stopped. "We're not putting anything in this time, Mr. Perry," he said. "The injector cap has been replaced with a signal amplifier. There's nothing to worry about."
"Oh, sorry," I said,
and moved my head back into position. "Don't be," Dr. Russell said, and fit the cap over my skull. "You're taking this better than most recruits. The guy before you screamed like a pig and fainted. We had to transfer him over unconscious. He's going to wake up young and green and very, very disturbed. Trust me, you're a doll." I smiled and glanced over to the body that would soon be me.
"Where's his cap?" I asked.
"Doesn't need one," Dr. Russell said, and began tapping his PDA. "Like I said, this body's been heavily modified."
"That sounds ominous," I said.
You'll feel differently once you're inside." Dr. Russell finished playing with his PDA and turned back. "Okay, we're ready. Let me tell you what's going to happen next."
"Please,"
I said. He turned the PDA around. "When I press this button," he indicated a button on the screen, "your sensor array will begin transmitting your brain activity into the amplifier. Once your brain activity is sufficiently mapped, I'll connect this creche to a specialized computer bank. At the same time, a similar connection will be opened to your new brain over there. When the connections check out, we'll broadcast your consciousness into your new brain. When the brain activity takes hold in your new brain, we'll sever the connection. And there you are, in your new brain and body. Any questions?
Does this procedure ever fail?
I asked.
You would ask that question, Dr. Russell said. The answer is yes. On rare occasions, something can go wrong. However, it's extremely rare. I've been doing this for 20 years, thousands of transfers, and I've lost someone only once. The woman had a massive stroke during the transfer process. Her brain patterns became chaotic and consciousness didn't transfer. Everyone else made it through fine.
So, as long as I don't actually die, I'll live, I said.
An interesting way to put it, but yes, that's about right.
How do you know when consciousness is transferred?
We'll know it through here, Dr. Russell tapped the side of his PDA. And we'll know it because you'll tell us. Trust me, you'll know when you've made the transfer.
How do you know? I asked. Have you ever done this? Been transferred?
Dr. Russell smiled. Actually, yes, he said. Twice, in fact.
But you're not green, I said.
That's the second transfer. You don't have to stay green forever, he said, almost wistfully. Then he blinked and looked at his PDA again. I'm afraid we have to cut the questions short now, Mr. Perry, since I have several more recruits to transfer after you. Are you ready to begin?
Hell no, I'm not ready, I said. I'm so scared my bowels are about to cut out.
Then let me rephrase, Dr. Russell said. Are you ready to get it over with?
God, yes, I said.
Then let's get to it, Dr. Russell said, and tapped the screen of his PDA. The crash gave a slight thunk as something physically switched on inside it. I glanced over to Dr. Russell. The amplifier, he said. This part will take about a minute. I grunted acknowledgement and looked over to my new me. It was cradled in the creche, motionless, like a wax figurine that someone had spilled green coloring into during the casting process. It looked like I did so long ago. Better than I did, actually. I wasn't the most athletic young adult on the block. This version of me looked like he was muscled like a competitive swimmer, and it had a great head of hair. I couldn't even imagine being in that body. We're at full resolution, Dr. Russell said. Opening connection. He tapped his PDA. There was a slight jolt, and then it suddenly felt like there was a big, echoey room in my brain.
Whoa,
I said. Echo chamber? Dr. Russell asked. I nodded. That's the computer bank, he said. Your consciousness is perceiving the small time lag between there and here. It's nothing to worry about. Okay, opening connection between the new body and the computer bank. Another PDA tap. From across the room, the new me opened his eyes. I did that, Dr. Russell said.
He's got cat's eyes, I said.
You've got cat's eyes, Dr. Russell said. Both connections are clear and noise-free. I'm going to start the transfer now. You're going to feel a little disoriented. A PDA tap, and I fell
way down
and felt like I was being pressed hard through a fine mesh mattress, and all the memories I ever had hit me in the face like a runaway brick wall. One clear flash of standing at the altar, watching Kathy walk down the aisle, seeing her foot catch the front of her gown, a small stutter in her step. Then she corrected beautifully, smiled up at me as if to say, "Yeah, like that's going to stop me." Another flash of Kathy, where the hell did I put the vanilla, and then the clatter of the mixing bowl hitting the kitchen tile. God damn it, Kathy. And then I'm me again. staring into Dr. Russell's room, feeling dizzy and looking straight at Dr. Russell's face, and also the back of his head, and thinking to myself, "Damn, that's a neat trick." And it seems like I just had that thought in stereo. And it hits me. I'm in two places at the same time. I smile and see the old me and the new me smile simultaneously. "I'm breaking the laws of physics," I say to Dr. Russell from two mouths. And he says, "You're in." And then he taps that goddamn PDA of his. And there's just one of me again. The other me. I can tell because I'm no longer staring at the new me anymore. I'm looking at the old me. And it stares at me like it knows something truly strange has just happened. And then the stare seems to say, "I'm no longer needed." And then it closes its eyes. "Mr. Perry," Dr. Russell said, and then repeated it, and then lightly slapped me on the cheek.
"Yes,"
I said. "I'm here. Sorry. What's your full name, Mr. Perry?" I thought about it for a second. Then, "John Nicholas Perry. What's your birthday?"
"June 10.
"What was the name of your second-grade teacher?" I looked directly at Dr. Russell. Christ, man, I couldn't even remember that when I was in my old body. Dr. Russell smiled. "Welcome to your new life, Mr. Perry. You made it through with flying colors." He unlatched the door to the crash and opened it wide. "Come out of there, please." I placed my hands, my green hands, on the side of the crash and pushed outward. I placed my right foot forward and staggered a little bit. Dr. Russell came up beside me and steadied me. "Careful," he said. "You've been an older man for a while. It's going to take you a little bit of time to remember how to be in a young body."
"What do you mean?"
I said. "Well," he said, "for one thing, you can straighten up." He was right. I was stooped slightly. "Kids, drink your milk." I straightened up and took another step forward. And another. Good news. I remembered how to walk. I cracked a grin like a schoolboy as I paced in the room.
"How do you feel?"
Dr. Russell asked.
"I feel young," I said, only a little joyously.
"You should," Dr. Russell said. "This body has a biological age of 20. It's actually younger than that, but we can grow them fast these days." I jumped experimentally and felt like I bounced halfway back to Earth.
"I'm not even old enough to drink anymore," I said.
"You're still 75 inside," Dr. Russell said. At that, I stopped my little jumping and walked over to my old body, resting in the crèche. It looked sad and sagged, like an old suitcase. I reached out to touch my old face. It was warm, and I felt breath. I recoiled.
"It's still alive,"
I said, backing away.
"It's brain dead," Dr. Russell said, quickly. "All your cognitive functions made the transfer. Once they had, I shut down this brain. It's running on autopilot, breathing and pumping blood, but nothing more, and that only provisionally. Left on its own, it'll be dead within a few days." I crept back to my old body.
"What's going to happen to it?" I asked.
"We'll store it in the short term," Dr. Russell said. "Mr. Perry, I hate to rush you, but it's time for you to return to your quarters so I can continue my work with other recruits. We have quite a few to get through before noon."
"I have some questions about this body," I said.
"We have a brochure," Dr. Russell said. "I'll have it downloaded into your PDA."
"Gee, thanks," I said.
"Not at all," Dr. Perry said, and nodded towards the colonials. "These men will escort you back to your quarters. Congratulations again."
I walked over to the Colonials, and we turned to go. Then I stopped.
"Wait," I said. "I forgot something."
I walked over to my old body again, still in the creche. I looked over to Dr. Russell and pointed to the door.
"I need to unlock this," I said.
Dr. Russell nodded. I unlocked it, opened it, and took my old body's left hand. On the ring finger was a simple gold band. I slipped it off and slipped it on my ring finger. Then I cupped my old face with my new hands.
"Thank you," I said to me. "Thank you for everything."
Then I went out with the Colonials.
The New You, an introduction to your new body for recruits of the Colonial Defense Forces. From the staff of Colonial Genetics, 2 centuries of building better bodies. This was the splash page of the brochure waiting for me on my PDA. You'll just have to imagine the illustration, which echoed the famous Da Vinci study of the human body, only with a nude green man where the other dude used to be. But let's continue. By now you have received your new body from the Colonial Defense Force. Congratulations! Your new body is the end result of decades of refinement by scientists and engineers at Colonial Genetics, and is optimized for the rigorous demands of CDF service. This document will serve to give a brief introduction on the important features and functions of your new body, and provide answers to some of the most common questions recruits have about their new body. Not just a new body, a better body. You've surely noticed the green skin tone of your new body. This isn't merely cosmetic. Your new skin, Chloroderm, trademark, incorporates chlorophyll to provide your body with an extra source of energy and to optimize your body's use of both oxygen and carbon dioxide. The result? You'll feel fresher, longer, and better able to perform your duties as a CDF service person. This is only the beginning of the improvements you'll find in your body. Here are some others. Your blood tissue has been replaced by Smart Blood, trademark, a revolutionary system that increases oxygen-carrying capacity fourfold while it guards your body against disease, toxins, and death from blood tissue loss. Our patented Cat's Eye, trademark, technology gives you sight you have to see to believe. Increased rod and cone counts give you better imaging resolution than can be achieved in most naturally evolved systems, while specially designed light amplifiers allow you to see clearly in extreme low-light situations. Our Uncommon Sense trademark suite of sense enhancements allow you to touch, smell, hear, and taste like you never have before, as our expanded nerve placement and optimized connections expand your perceptual ranges in all sense categories. You'll feel the difference from the first day. How strong do you want to be? With Hard Arm, trademark, technologies that boost natural muscle strength and reaction time, you'll be stronger and faster than you ever dreamed possible. So strong and fast, in fact, that by law, Colonial Genetics can't sell this technology on the consumer market. That's a real leg up for you recruits. Never be unconnected again. You'll never lose your Brain Pal trademark computer because it resides in your own brain. Our proprietary assistive adaptive interface works with you so you can access your Brain Pal your way. Your Brain Pal also serves to coordinate non-organic technologies in your new body, such as Smart Blood. CDF service people swear by this amazing piece of technology, and so will you. Building a better you. You'll no doubt be amazed at how much your new body can do, but have you wondered how it was designed? You may be interested to know that your body is just the latest series in a line of advanced improved bodies designed by Colonial Genetics. Through proprietary technology, we adapt both genetic information from other species and the latest in miniaturized robotic technologies to improve your new body. It's hard work, but you'll be glad we made the effort. From our first improvements nearly 2 centuries ago, we've progressively built on our work.
to introduce changes and improvements, we rely first on advanced computer modeling techniques to simulate the effects of each proposed improvement on the entire body system. The improvements that make it through this process are then tested on biological models. Then and only then are improvements incorporated into the final body design, integrated with the starter DNA you provide. Rest assured that each body improvement is safe and tested, and designed to make a better you. Common questions about your new body. 1. Does my new body have a brand name? Yes, your new body is known as the Defender Series 12 Hercules model. Technically, it's known as CG/CDF Model 12 Revision 1.2.11. This body model is for use only by the Colonial Defense Forces. Additionally, each body has its own model number for maintenance purposes. You can access your own number through your BrainPal. Don't worry, you can still use your given name for everyday purposes. 2. Does my new body age? The Defender Series body is designed to provide the CDF with optimum performance its entire operating life. To do this, advanced regenerative techniques are employed at the genetic level to reduce natural entropic tendencies. With a basic maintenance regimen, your new body will remain in top condition as long as you operate it. You'll also find that injuries and disabilities are corrected quickly, so you can be up and running again in no time flat. 3. Can I pass these amazing improvements to my children? No. Your body and its biological and technological systems are patented by Colonial Genetics and may not be passed on without permission. Also, due to the extensive nature of Defender Series improvements, its DNA is no longer genetically compatible with unmodified humans, and lab tests indicate that Defender Series mating creates incompatibilities lethal to the embryo in every case. Additionally, the CDF has determined that the ability to transmit genetic information is non-essential to its service people's mission. Therefore, each Defender model ships sterile, although other related functionality remains intact. 4. I'm worried about the theological implications of this new body. What should I do? While neither Colonial Genetics nor the CDF maintains an official position on the theological or psychological ramifications of the transfer of consciousness from one body to another, we understand that many recruits may have questions or concerns. Each recruit transport comes equipped with clergy representing most of Earth's major religions and an additional complement of psychological therapists. We encourage you to seek them out and discuss your questions with them. 5. How long will I stay in my new body? Defender Series bodies are designed for CDF use. So long as you stay in the CDF, you will be able to use and enjoy the technological and biological advancements of this new body. When you leave the CDF, you will be provided with a new, unaltered human body based on your own original DNA. From all of us here at Colonial Genetics, congratulations on your new body. We know it will serve you well through your service in the Colonial Defense Force. Thanks for your service to the colonies, and enjoy your new body. I set the PDA down, went over to the stateroom sink, and looked into the mirror at my new face. It was impossible to ignore the eyes. My old body had brown eyes, muddy brown, but with interesting flecks of gold. Kathy used to tell me that she had read that flecks of color in the iris were nothing more than additional fatty tissue. So I had fat eyes. If those eyes were fat, these were positively obese. They were gold from the pupil outwards toward the rim, where they shaded towards green. The rim of the iris was a deep emerald. Spikes of that color stabbed towards the pupils. The pupils themselves were slitted, drawn tight by the light directly above the mirror. I turned off that light and then turned the primary light off as well. The only light in the room was a small LED on the PDA. My old eyes would have never been able to see off of that. My new eyes took only a moment to adjust. The room was undeniably dim, but I could make out every object clearly. I went back to the mirror and looked in. My eyes were dilated, like someone with a belladonna overdose. I flicked the sink light back on and watched my pupils constrict with impressive speed. I took off my clothes and took the first real look at my new body. My earlier impression of my form turned out to be correct. For lack of a better term, I was totally buffed out. I ran my hand down my chest and washboard stomach. I had never been this athletically fit in my life. I had no idea how they managed to make the new me this fit. I wondered how long it would take me to get into the flabby shape I had been in during my real 20s. Then I wondered, given the amount of fiddling they had done with this body's DNA, if it was even possible for it to become flabby. I hoped not. I liked the new me. Oh, and I was entirely hairless from the eyelashes down. I mean hairless. Not a spare hair anywhere. Arms bare, legs bare, back bare. Not that it had never not been bare before. Private bits bare. I rubbed my chin to feel if there was a hint of stubble there. Smooth as a baby's bottom. Or my bottom now. I looked down at my package. To be honest, without hair, it looked a little forlorn. The hair on my head was full but nondescript brown. That much hadn't changed from my previous incarnation. I held my hand in front of my face to get a look at the skin tone. It was a shade of green that was light but not glaring, which was good. I don't think I could have handled being chartreuse. My skin was an even tone across my body, although my nipples and the tip of my penis were slightly darker. Basically, I seemed to have the same color contrast as before, just in a different hue. One thing I did notice, however, my veins were more noticeable and grayish. I suspect that whatever color Smart Blood trademark was, whatever it really was, it wasn't blood red. I dressed myself again. My PDA beeped at me. I picked it up. There was a message waiting. "You now have access to your Brain Pal trademark computer system," it read. "Would you like to activate it at this time?" There were buttons on the screen for yes and no. I picked yes. Suddenly, a deep, rich, soothing voice out of nowhere. I near jumped out of my new green skin. "Hello," it said. "You are interfacing with your Brain Pal trademark internal computer with the patented assistive adaptive interface. Do not be alarmed. Thanks to the Brain Pal integration, the voice you are now hearing is being generated directly to the hearing centers of your brain." Great, I thought. There's another voice in my head now. "After this brief introductory session, you may turn off the voice at any time. We'll begin with some options you can choose by answering yes or no. At this point, your Brain Pal would like you to say yes and no when directed, so that it may learn to recognize this response. So, when you are ready, please say the word yes. You may say it at any time." The voice stopped. I hesitated, a little bit dazed. "Please say yes now," the voice repeated. "Yes," I said, a little jumpy. "Thank you for saying yes. Now, please say no."
"No," I said, and for a moment wondered if the Brain Pal would think I was saying no to its request, get huffy, and fry my brain in its own juices.
"Thank you for saying no," the voice said, revealing itself to be something of a literalist. "As you progress together, you will learn in time that you will not need to verbalize these commands in order for your Brain Pal to respond to them. However, in the short term, you will probably wish to verbalize while you become comfortable communicating with your Brain Pal. At this time, you have the option of continuing with audio or switching to a text interface. Would you prefer to switch now to a text interface?"
"God, yes," I said.
"We will now proceed with a text interface," a line of text read, floating directly in my line of sight. The text was perfectly contrasted against what I was staring at. I moved my head and the text stayed dead center. The contrast changed to stay perfectly readable at all times. Wild. It is recommended that during your initial text session you remain seated to avoid injuring yourself, the brain pal wrote. Please sit now. I sat. During your initial sessions with your brain pal, you will find it easier to communicate by verbalizing. To aid the brain pal in understanding your questions, we will now teach your brain pal to understand your voice as it speaks. Please speak the following phonemes as you read them. In my field of vision, a list of phonemes unspooled. I read them right to left. The brain pal then had me speak a number of short sentences. I did. Thank you, the brain pal wrote. Your brain pal will now be able to take direction from the sound of your voice. Would you like to personalize your brain pal now?
Yes, I said.
Many brain pal users find it useful to give their brain pal a name other than brain pal. Would you like to name your brain pal at this time?
Yes, I said.
Please speak the name you would like to give your brain pal.
Asshole, I said.
You have selected asshole, the brain pal wrote, and to its credit, it spelled the word correctly. Be aware that many recruits have selected this name for their brain pal. Would you like to choose a different name?
No,
I said, and was proud that so many of my fellow recruits also felt this way about their brain pal. Your brain pal is now asshole, the brain pal wrote. You may change this name in the future if you like. Now you must choose an access phrase to activate asshole. While asshole is active at all times, it will only respond to commands after it has been activated. Please choose a short phrase. Asshole suggests activate asshole, but you may choose another phrase. Please say your activation phrase now.
Hey, asshole, I said.
You have chosen hey, asshole. Please say it again to confirm.
I did.
Then it asked me to choose a deactivation phrase. I chose, of course,
go away, asshole.
Would you like asshole to refer to itself in the first person?
Absolutely, I said.
I am asshole.
Of course you are.
I await your commands or queries.
Are you intelligent? I asked.
I am equipped with a natural language processor and other systems to understand questions and comments and to provide answers, which often gives the appearance of intelligence, especially when connected to larger computer networks. BrainPal systems, however, are not natively intelligent. For example, this was an automated response. This question is asked frequently.
How do you understand me?
At this stage, I am responding to your voice, asshole wrote. As you speak, I am monitoring your brain and learning how your brain activates when you desire to communicate with me. In time, I will be able to understand you without the need for you to speak. And in time, you may also learn to use me without consciously audible or visual cues.
What do you do? I asked.
I have a range of abilities. Would you like to see a formatted list?
Please, I said.
A massive list appeared before my eyes. To see a list of subcategories, please select a top category and say, Expand Category. To perform an action, please say, Open Category. I read down the list. Apparently, there was very little asshole couldn't do. He could send messages to other recruits. He could download reports. He could play music or video. He could play games. He could call up any document on a system. He could store incredible amounts of data. He could perform complex calculations. He could diagnose physical ailments and provide suggestions for cures. He could create a local network among a chosen group of other BrainPal users. He could provide instantaneous translations of hundreds of human and alien languages. He could even provide field of vision information on any other BrainPal user. I turned this option on. I barely recognized myself anymore. I doubt I'd recognize any of the other old farts. Overall, asshole was a pretty useful thing to have sitting inside one's brain. I heard an unlatching sound at my door. I looked up.
Hey, asshole, I said.
What time is it?
It is now 1200, asshole wrote.
I had spent the better part of 90 minutes fiddling with him. Well, enough of that. I was ready to see some real people.
"Go away, asshole," I said.
"Goodbye," asshole wrote. The text disappeared as soon as I read it. There was a knock on the door. I walked over to open it. I figured it was Harry. I wondered what he looked like. He looked like a knockout brunette with dark green olive skin and legs that went all the way up.
"You're not Harry," I said,
incredibly stupidly. The brunette looked at me and looked me up and down.
"John?"
she finally said. I stared blankly for a second, and the name hit me just before the ID floated ghost-like before my eyes.
"Jesse?"
I said. She nodded. I stared. I opened my mouth to say something. She grabbed my head and kissed me so hard that I was knocked back into my quarters. She managed to kick the door shut on our way down to the floor. I was impressed. I had forgotten just how easy it was for a young man to get an erection. Chapter 6. I had forgotten how many times a young man can get an erection, too.
"Don't take this the wrong way,"
Jesse said, lying on top of me after the third time.
"But I'm really not all that attracted to you."
"Thank God," I said. "If you were, I'd be worn down to a nub by now."
"Don't get me wrong," Jesse said. "I'm fond of you. Even before the..."
She motioned with her hand here, trying to think of a way to describe a rejuvenating full-body transplant.
"The change. You were intelligent and kind and funny. A good friend."
"Uh-huh," I said. "You know, Jesse, usually the let's be friends speech is to prevent sex."
"I just don't want you to have illusions about what this is about."
"Well, I was under the impression that it was about magically being transported into a body of a 20-year-old and being so excited about it that it was imperative to have wild sex with the very first person we saw."
Jesse stared at me for a second, then burst out laughing.
"Yes, that's exactly it. Although in my case it was a second person. I have a roommate, you know."
"Yeah? How does Maggie clean up?"
"Oh, my God," Jesse said. "She makes me look like a beached whale, John."
I ran my hands over her sides.
"Oh, that's a mighty fine beached whale, Jesse."
"I know,"
Jesse said, and suddenly sat up, straddling me.
She raised her arms up and crossed them behind her head, perking up her already marvelously firm and full breasts.
I felt her inner thighs radiating heat as they wrapped around my midsection. I knew that even though I didn't have an erection at that very moment, one was coming right up.
"I mean, look at me,"
she said, redundantly, because I hadn't taken my eyes off her from the moment she sat up.
"I look fabulous. I don't say that to be vain. It's just I never look this good in real life, not even close."
"I find that hard to believe," I said.
She grabbed her breasts and pointed the nipples at my face.
"See these?"
she said, and wiggled the left one.
"In real life, this one was a cup size smaller than this one, and it was still too large. I had a permanent backache from puberty onward, and I think they were this firm for 1 week when I was 13. Maybe."
She reached down, grabbed my hands, and placed them on her perfect flat belly.
"I never had one of these either," she said. "I always carried a little pouch down here, even before I had babies. After 2 kids, well, let's just say that if I had ever wanted a third, it would have had a duplex in there."
I slid my hands behind her and grabbed her ass.
"What about this?" I said.
"Wide load,"
Jesse said, and laughed.
"I was a big girl, my friend."
"Well, being big's not a crime," I said. "Kathy was on the larger side. I liked it just fine."
"I didn't have a problem with it at the time," she said. Body issues are foolish. On the other hand, I wouldn't trade now.
She ran her hands over her body provocatively.
I'm all sexy.
And with that, she did a little giggle and a head flip. I laughed. Jesse leaned forward and peered into my face.
I'm finding this cat's eye thing incredibly fascinating, she said. I wonder if they actually used cat DNA to make them. You know, spliced cat DNA with ours. I wouldn't mind being part cat.
I don't think it's really cat DNA, I said. We're not exhibiting other cat-like attributes. Jesse sat back up.
Like what?
She said. Well, I said, and let my hands wander up to her breasts. For one thing, male cats have barbs on their penis.
Get out,
Jesse said. No, it's true, I said. It's the barbs that stimulate the female to ovulate. Look it up. Anyway, no barbs down there. I think you'd have noticed if there were.
That doesn't prove anything, Jesse said,
and suddenly sent her back part back and her forward part forward to lay directly on top of me. She grinned salaciously.
It could be that we just haven't been doing it hard enough to make them pop out.
I'm sensing a challenge, I said.
I'm sensing something, too,
she said, and wiggled.
What are you thinking about?
Jesse asked me later. I'm thinking about Kathy, I said, and how often we'd lie around like we're doing now.
You mean on the carpet?
Jesse said, smiling. I bopped her gently on the head. Not that part. Just lying around after sex, talking and enjoying each other's company. We were doing this the first time we talked about enlisting.
Why did you bring it up?
Jesse said. I didn't, I said. Kathy did. It was on my 60th birthday, and I was depressed about getting older, so she suggested that we sign up when the time came. I was a little surprised. We'd always been anti-military. We protested the Subcontinental War, you know, when it wasn't exactly popular to do that.
Lots of people protested that war,
Jesse said. Yeah, but we really protested. Became a little bit of a joke about it in town, actually.
So how did she rationalize signing up with the Colonial Army?
She said she wasn't against war or the military in a general sense, just that war and our military. She said that people have the right to defend themselves and that it was probably a nasty universe out there. And she said that beyond those noble reasons, we'd be young again to boot.
But you wouldn't be able to enlist together,
Jesse said.
Unless you were the same age.
She was a year younger than me, I said. And I did mention that to her. I said that if I joined the army, I'd be officially dead. We wouldn't be married anymore, and who knows if we'd ever see each other again.
What did she say?
She said these were technicalities. She'd find me again and drag me to the altar like she had before. And she would have, you know. She could be a bear about these things. Jessie propped herself up on her elbow and looked at me.
I'm sorry she's not here with you, John.
I smiled. That's all right, I said. I just miss my wife from time to time, that's all.
I understand,
Jesse said.
I miss my husband, too.
I glanced over to her. I thought he left you for a younger woman and then got food poisoning.
He did, and he did, and he deserved to vomit his guts out,
Jesse said.
I don't miss the man, really, but I miss having a husband. It's nice to have someone you know you're supposed to be with. It's nice to be married.
It's nice to be married. I agreed. Jesse snuggled up to me and draped an arm over my chest.
Of course this is nice, too. It's been a while since I've done this.
Lie on a floor? It was her turn to bop me.
No. Well, Yes, actually. But more specifically, lie around after sex. Or have sex, for that matter. You don't want to know how long it's been since I've had it.
Sure I do.
Bastard. 8 years.
Well, no wonder you jumped me the minute you saw me, I said.
You got that right, Jesse said. You happen to be very conveniently located.
Location is everything. That's what my mother always told me.
You had a strange mother, Jesse said. Yo, bitch, what time is it?
What? I said.
I'm talking to the voice in my head, she said.
A nice name you have for it, I said.
What did you name yours?
Asshole. Jesse nodded.
Sounds about right. Well, the bitch tells me it's just after 1600. We have 2 hours until dinner. You know what that means?
I don't know. I think 4 times is my limit, even when I'm young and super improved.
Calm yourself. It means we have just enough time for a nap.
Should I grab a blanket?
Don't be silly. Just because I had sex on the carpet doesn't mean I want to sleep on it. You've got an extra bunk. I'm going to use it.
So I'm going to have to nap alone?
I'll make it up to you, Jesse said. Remind me when I wake up.
I did. She did.
God damn it,
Thomas said as he sat down at the table carrying a tray so piled with food that it was a miracle he could even lift it.
Aren't we all just too good-looking for words?
He was right. The old farts had cleaned up amazingly well. Thomas and Harry and Alan could all have been male models. Of the four of us, I was definitely the ugly duckling, and I looked, well, I looked good. As for the women, Jessie was stunning. Susan was even more so, and Maggie frankly looked like a goddess. It actually hurt to look at her. It hurt to look at all of us. In that good, dizzying sort of way. We all spent a few minutes just staring at each other. And it wasn't just us. As I scanned through the room, I couldn't find a single ugly human in it. It was pleasingly disturbing.
It's impossible, Harry said, suddenly, to me. I looked over at him.
I looked around, too, he said. There's no way in hell all the people in this room all looked as good as they do now, when they were originally this age.
Speak for yourself, Harry, Thomas said. If anything, I do believe I am a shade less attractive than in my salad days.
Well, you're the same color as the salad these days, Harry said. And even if we excuse doubtful Thomas over here,
I'm going to cry all the way to a mirror, Thomas said.
It's well nigh impossible that everyone is in the same basket. I guarantee you, I did not look this good when I was 20. I was fat, I had massive acne, I was already balding.
Stop it, Susan said. I'm getting aroused.
And I'm trying to eat, said Thomas.
I can laugh about it now because I look like this, Harry said, running his hand down his body, as if to present this year's model.
But the new me has very little to do with the old me, I'll tell you that.
You sound as if it bothers you, Alan said.
Well, it does, a little, Harry admitted. I mean, I'll take it. But when someone gives me a gift horse, I look it in the mouth. Why are we so good-looking?
Good genes, Alan said.
Well, sure, Harry said. But whose? Ours? Or something that they spliced out of a lab somewhere?
We're just all in excellent shape now, Jesse said. I was telling John that this body is in far better shape than my real one ever was.
Maggie suddenly spoke up.
I say that too, she said. I say my real body when I mean my old body. It's as if this body isn't real to me yet.
It's real enough, sister, Susan said. You still have to pee with it.
I know.
This from the woman that criticized me for oversharing, Thomas said.
My point, because I did have one, Jesse said, is that while they were toning up our bodies, they took some time to tone up the rest of us as well.
Agreed, Harry said. But that's not telling us why they did it.
It's so we bond, Maggie said.
Everyone stared.
"Well, look who's coming out of her shell." "Bite me, Susan," Maggie said.
Susan grinned.
"Look, it's basic human psychology that we're inclined to like people who we find attractive. Moreover, everyone in this room, even us, are basically strangers to each other, and have few, if any, ties to bring us together in a short time. Making us all look good to each other is a way to promote bonding, or will be, once we start training."
"I don't see how it's going to help the army if we're all too busy ogling each other to fight," Thomas said.
"It's not about that," Maggie said. "Sexual attraction is just a side issue here. It's a matter of quickly instilling trust and devotion. People instinctively trust and want to help people they find attractive, regardless of sexual desire. It's why newscasters are always attractive. It's why attractive people don't have to work as hard in school."
"But we're all attractive now," I said. "In the land of the incredibly attractive, the merely good-looking could be in trouble."
"And even now, some of us look better than others," Thomas said. "Every time I look at Maggie, I feel like the oxygen is being sucked from the room. No offense, Maggie."
"None taken," Maggie said. "The baseline here isn't each other, as we are now, anyway. It's how we all appeared before. In the short term, that's reflexively the baseline we'll use, and a short-term advantage is all they'd be looking for anyway."
"So you're saying that you don't feel oxygen-deprived when you look at me?"
Susan said to Thomas.
"It's not meant to be an insult," Thomas said.
"I'll remember that when I'm strangling you," Susan said. "Speaking of oxygen-deprived..."
"Stop flirting, you two," Alan said, and turned his attention to Maggie. "I think you're right about the attraction thing, but I think you're forgetting the one person we're supposed to be the most attracted to. Ourselves. For better or worse, these bodies we're in are still alien to us. I mean, between the fact that I'm green and I've got a computer named Dipshit in my head..." He stopped and looked at us all. "What did you all name your brain pals?"
"Asshole," I said.
"Bitch,"
Jesse said.
"Dickwad,"
said Thomas.
"Fuckhead,"
said Harry.
"Satan," said Maggie.
"Sweetie,"
said Susan.
"Apparently I'm the only one who likes my brain pal."
"More like you were the only one that wasn't disturbed by having a voice suddenly appear in your skull," Alan said. "But this is my point. Suddenly becoming young and having massive physical and mechanical changes takes a toll on one's psyche. Even if we're glad to be young again, and I know I am, we're still going to be alienated from our new selves. Making us look good to ourselves is one way to help us get settled in."
"These are crafty people we're dealing with," Harry said, with ominous finality.
"Oh, lighten up, Harry,"
Jesse said, and gave him a little nudge.
"You're the only person I know who would turn being young and sexy into a dark conspiracy."
"You think I'm sexy?" Harry said.
"You're dreamy, sweetheart,"
Jesse said, and batted her eyes dramatically at him. Harry cracked a goofy grin.
"That's the first time this century anyone said that to me. Okay, I'm sold."
The man who stood in front of the theater, full of recruits, was a battle-tested veteran. Our brain pals informed us that he had been in the Colonial Defense Forces for 14 years and had participated in several battles, the names of which meant nothing to us now, but no doubt would at some point in the future. This man had gone to new places, met new races, and exterminated them on sight. He looked all of 23 years old.
"Good evening, recruits,"
he began, after we had all settled down.
"I am Lieutenant Colonel Brian Higgy, and for the remainder of your journey I will be your commanding officer. As a practical matter, this means very little. Between now and our arrival at Beta Pisces 3 1 week from now, you will have only one command objective. However, it will serve to remind you that from this point forward you are subject to Colonial Defense Force rules and regulations. You have your new bodies now, and with those new bodies will come new responsibilities. You may be wondering about your new bodies, as to what they can do, what stresses they can endure, and how you can use them in the service of the Colonial Defense Forces.
All these questions will be answered soon as you begin your training on Beta Pyxis 3. Right now, however, our main goal is simply for you to become comfortable in your new skins. And so, for the remainder of your trip, here are your orders. Have fun. This brought up a murmur and some scattered laughter in the ranks. The idea of having fun being an order was amusingly counterintuitive. Lieutenant Colonel Higgy showed a mirthless grin.
I understand this appears to be an unusual order. Be that as it may, having fun with your new body is going to be the best way for you to get used to the new abilities you have. When you begin your training, top performance will be required of you from the very start. There will be no ramp up. There's no time for that. The universe is a dangerous place. Your training will be short and difficult. We can't afford to have you uncomfortable with your body. Recruits, consider this next week as a bridge between your old lives and your new ones. In this time, which you will ultimately find all too brief, you can use these new bodies, designed for military use, to enjoy the pleasures you enjoyed as a civilian. You'll find the Henry Hudson is filled with recreations and activities you've loved on Earth. Use them. Enjoy them. Get used to working with your new bodies. Learn a little about their potential and see if you can divine their limits. Ladies and gentlemen, we will meet again for a final briefing before you begin your training. Until then, have fun. I do not exaggerate when I say that while life in the Colonial Defense Force has its rewards, this may be the last time you will be entirely carefree in your new bodies. I suggest you use this time wisely. I suggest you have fun. That is all. You're dismissed.
We all went insane. Well, let's start, of course, with the sex. Everyone was doing it with everybody else, in more places on the ship than it is probably sensible to discuss. After the first day, in which it became clear that any semi-secluded place was going to be used for enthusiastic humping, it became courteous to make a lot of noise as one moved about, to alert the conjugal that you were on your way in. Sometime during the second day, it became general knowledge that I had a room to myself. I was besieged with pleas for access. They were summarily denied. I'd never operated a house of ill repute, and I wasn't about to start now. The only people who were going to fuck around in my room were me and any invited guests. There was only one of those. And it wasn't Jesse. It was Maggie, who, as it turned out, had had a thing for me even when I was wrinkled. After our briefing with Higgy, she more or less ambushed me at my door, which made me wonder if this was somehow standard operating procedure for post-change women. Regardless, she was great fun, and, in private at least, not in the least retiring. It turns out that she had been a professor at Oberlin College. She taught philosophy of Eastern religions. She wrote 6 books on the subject, The Things You Learn About People. The other old farts also stuck to their own. Jesse paired up with Harry after our initial fling, while Alan, Tom, and Susan worked out some arrangement with Tom in the center. It was good that Tom liked to eat a lot. He needed his strength. The ferocity at which the recruits went for sex undoubtedly appears unseemly from the outside, but it made perfect sense from where we stood, or lay, or were bent over upon. Take a group of people who generally have had little sex, due to lack of partners or declining health and libido, stuff them into brand new, young, attractive, and highly functional bodies, and then hurl them into space far away from anything they ever knew and everyone they ever loved. The combination of the three was a recipe for sex. We did it because we could, and because it beats being lonely. It's not the only thing we did, of course. Using these gorgeous new bodies only for sex would be like singing only one note. Our bodies were claimed to be new and improved, and we found it to be true in simple and surprising ways. Harry and I had to call off a ping-pong game when it became clear neither of us was going to win, not because we were both incompetent, but because our reflexes and hand-eye coordination made it damn near impossible to get the ball past the other guy. We volleyed for 30 minutes, and would have gone longer if the ping-pong ball we were using hadn't cracked from the force of being hit at such tremendously high speeds. It was ridiculous.
It was marvelous.
Other recruits found out the same thing we did in other ways. On the third day, I was in a crowd that watched two recruits engage in what was possibly the most thrilling martial arts battle ever. They did things with their bodies that simply shouldn't have been possible, assuming normal human flexibility and standard gravity. At one point, one of the men placed a kick that launched the other halfway across the room. Instead of collapsing in a pile of broken bones, as I'm sure I would have, the other guy did a backflip mid-flight, righted himself, and launched himself back at his opponent. It looked like a special effect. In a way, it was. After the battle, both men breathed deeply and bowed to his opponent. And then both of them collapsed onto each other, simultaneously laughing and sobbing hysterically. It's a weird, wonderful, and yet troubling thing to be as good at something as you ever wanted to be, and then to be even better than that. People went too far, of course. I personally saw one recruit leap off a high landing, either under the assumption